Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Gary Young and I trying to charge his phone, but it what kind of crazy thing is that?
It's a Mophie. It's a Mophie. It adds battery life, but this time of year, you always need to charge your phone.
Well, it's hard to add battery life if you can't plug it in.
I have a charger at home, but I didn't realize I was down to 17%, but life will go on.
Well,
we did function before these things came
out. I know, it's hard to believe. Well, it's funny, because when I drive anywhere these days, I think back to my on-the-road salesman days, when you would drive, and you'd get off at a rest stop, or a highway, whatever, and there'd be those bank of phones,
yeah.
And you'd get out of the car, and you'd have to call the office, you'd have to call a client, you'd have to make appointments. It's crazy.
The train stop by my Starbucks in Pasadena has a payphone left. That's one of the few that I can remember. You know, they're just not around anymore. I mean, you know.
You're old enough to remember when they used to lock up the phones at the racetrack.
Oh, Marge Everett. She, you know, I mean, yeah, there was stories of people actually,
right?
You know, being in phone booths very close to the racetrack and getting signals from guys in the grandstand, and might be true. It might be true. You know,
you don't know any of those kinds of people.
No.
Not you.
No, not in the world of horse racing. No.
Meanwhile, before we talk anything Derby Oaks related, you made your trip down to OBS, and I tell you, I looked at the numbers last night and made some notes. Very, very solid start to finish, and this sale has become somebody to, who was it? I guess it was Jessica Martini, I think, from TDN, or Joe Nevels. From DRF, the Keeneland September of the 2-year-old season.
It is. You know, 10, 12 years ago, it was thought of that if, you know, most of the sales were in February or early March and stuff, and it was thought if these horses were in Keir, that they might be the slow-developing ones or not necessarily, you know, the precocious ones, but the times have changed, and this has became the sale that a lot of people just, you know, they aim for. I mean, it's still the same thing is prevalent there in that, you know, the 100 to 200 market, it's not that much there anymore. If they want them, they want them, and they're going to spend more than that, and if they don't want them, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to get to 100 on them. So it's but it's a very strong sale. It is. It is. And, you know, I've been away from home a long time.
And a few more days, another few days. Girlfriend coming to join in the festivities?
Jennifer's going to be here.
Very nice. Good. Well, let's get a couple of thoughts from you. And, of course, you and the little general were doing some shopping.
We did. And I bought a horse for my good client, Mr. House. He's more of a friend than he is a client. He's just like, he's a longtime friend and, you know, we're hoping to find another Gabriel Charles with the horse we bought, 305. He's had enough coal to, the horse had some horses sell very, very well. Dennis O'Neill bought one on the last day for 485. You know, it's been, that horse has been very well received. It was a good sale, and I still have some ammo left for, Timonium. So, you know, I'll go home, the day after the Derby, see my dog for a few days and, kind of get my life back in order, and it'll be time to leave again. So, you know, after that, I'll come home and not want to see an airport for a while.
Well, you mentioned he's had enough, and this happens to be a horse that we've talked about the last several years. Woodford Thoroughbreds, and we brought our filly had gotten hurt, and she lost. She lost the foal to Rhodococcus. And Chuck Simon had said, you know, this he's had enough. Chuck was way ahead of the curve. Said this horse got a real shot to succeed. And they were giving away. They were looking for people to come to them and bring the mares to them, and look at this success. Like there's a handful of big numbers.
You know, it's such an imperfect science. You think of some of the dominant sires of our last of the last 20-25 years, and what they started out for. Stormcat was started out for a ham sandwich. Tappet started out. He's had enough sire. He was starting off for a ham sandwich, and. I mean, it's on a smaller scale. I mean, Unusual Heat in California. He was breeding mares that shouldn't probably even have been bred, and was throwing good horses. So, it's you know, sometimes the most unexpected horses turn out to be diamond sires, and the other side of the coin is some of the best bred, most accomplished race horses can sometimes be disappointments. So it's. That's just the nature of the game.
You also, as agent, bought for Mike Dove the
Dub. They messed it up.
It's Michael Dub. You bought this for?
Michael Dub. Yeah.
How funny is that?
Yeah. I told them twice to correct it, and they didn't. But
well, this is a hard spun colt.
Yeah. I bought it off of Al Brennan. He looked very. He looked like a colt that he worked good. He bounces like a rubber ball, and he. Looked like a colt that was in the process and would still be growing, and he's a medium-sized colt now, but looked like a horse that was an unfinished product. And a friend of mine, Marette Farrell, who is purchases some pretty big number horses for Speedway Stable, she bred the horse, and she came and saw me after I had purchased them, and she said that you know, they were very you know, they're very excited over the development that hard-spun colt had done the last few months, and that they were, you know, hopeful that it would, hopeful that he would continue to go on and perform well for him.
Who's the he's had enough? Where's he going to go?
I think he's going to wind up with Phil D'Amato in California, but that will be Mr. House's decision. But I think he's going to wind up with Phil D'Amato in California.
Very good. And then the Eclipse, how many of the Eclipse babies were you involved in?
I was involved with the Cheapy, the Street Boss, and that was about it. I mean, the rest of them they bought on their own, but... we bought a few with the previous sale, and you know, we're always looking. We're always looking.
A couple of names that caught my eye from the sale that are, I mean, we know that the Candy Rides
the exchange rate I bought with Aaron too. The exchange rate that they bought in partnership with Dogwood, that was mine as well. Yes,
New York bred.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Contessa is going to train that horse, and Cott Campbell took a piece of the horse, which is. You know, Cott Campbell, he's like a legend in the game.
Without a doubt. And a couple of names that surprised me just watching, just kind of thumbing through results. And there's a commonality. It's funny. There's a certain trainer that whose horses seem to be doing okay. There were babies by Super 99, by Drill, by Flashback that all sold very well.
Shaking It Up, Philly.
Shaking It Up as well.
That sold on the final day that Mr. Hughes bought. Mr. Hughes stand Shaking It Up. And that horse was, that filly was like a star. I mean, I didn't really have anyone that would go as high as Mr. Hughes was going to go, and I assumed that 400,000 wasn't his last bid. But Baffert's, and pretty soon the Pharaohs will be out. You know, I mean, him and Pletcher and Chad, I'm sure in the near future, I mean, there's going to be a lot of races where the offspring, they're sired by predominantly their stars of the past.
Well, and you bought a Street Boss. Street Boss had a very good sale. Cantheros, obviously, out of control. It's My Lucky Day, Under the Radar. It had a very good sale. Sold through 8 for 8.
He was a nice horse. Eddie Place had him. There was one that went for a lot of money in March. My friend Jimmy DeVito bid to 400,000 on him. He said he was shaken because he had never bid that much before. But he's Jimmy's a good friend of mine. I've known him since I was walking hats he's. You know, a lot of these sires, they need to hit in their first couple of years. It's a fickle business. But if they get some runners in the first couple of years, they'll get a real shot. And it's just the truth of the matter is if they throw duds the first couple of years, they might get moved to lesser jurisdictions outside of Kentucky, or they might need to get their passport in order because they're going to be going to Korea or someplace like that. But if they break running, they get a chance. And this is a very important time, like I say, for them. You know, see how their horses sell is very big, but. Even bigger than that is how they perform in their first couple of years.
Well, let's talk now about how the horses have performed that we've seen out here Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and this morning. And I said to Travis Stone minutes ago, Gary, I'm sorry, it's more subdued, maybe because we're waiting for Mendelssohn to justify Bolt Oro and even the New York horses. We have to get Enticed and Forense Fire here. So some of it's quantity. However, it does feel fairly subdued. We only had one work on Sunday, that being Hofberg, who went well. Good Magic was the star of a quiet Saturday. Going back to Friday, you've written up and at KentuckyDerby.com via Twin Spires the information available. But some thoughts about what feels like a subdued lead up to this point.
You know, it's. You have Pletcher and you have Brown doing their thing, but this year, my home of Southern California is they're going in anyway. They look to be very strong in this Derby, and this year Mr. Baffert chose to get his final work out of the way at Santa Anita and not bring him in here to Churchill, and. Mr. Ruiz decided to do the same thing, and you have a complete, I wouldn't call it a wild card, but a complete enigma in Mendelssohn. Like, we know he has talent, we're just going to find out how much he has, because it appears to be a very strong Derby, but the reason why it might be a little subdued around here is because it's very possible that the first three favorites are going to be Justify, Mendelssohn, and Bolt de Oro, not necessarily in that order, and none of them are here yet. None of them are here, so it's going to pick up when they arrive in town, and as the closer to the race we get. But we've had some important workouts here, but some of the more important stuff has happened in places other than Churchill, and some of the more important horses going in anyway are not even on the ground yet.
let's talk about what we saw over the last 72 hours, and that includes the quartet of Pletchers. And even today, that when they came out for the first time to gallop, Pletchers got the system. They work, then they kind of stretch very lightly, jog, then they get a day off, then they come back and get back into their routine. And Magnum Moon always seems to be the first to want to go. Does that bother you at all that he's a horse that you can't back up to the rail and let him stand? He comes out there and he wants to go. It he doesn't seem to want to relax.
No, that would, you know, I mean, you know, he's actually looking forward to training. The ones that would worry you are the ones that don't want to go, that just want to get out there and just stand there. I mean, there have been some very good horses, John Henry being the one I'd remember most. He'd come on the track and stand for like a half an hour, and he'd go when he felt like it because he knew he was John Henry. You know, Magnum Moon, I think he just enjoys it so much, and when he's backtracking, he just can't wait to break into a gallop and go. And that's how he was this morning. You know, I mean, most horses will stand and just wait for the rider to give them the cue till it's time to go, but you know, there are some like Magnum Moon that just can't wait to go, and then there's other ones, like I said, like John Henry and other ones that they'll, you know, Zenyatta do that too. She'd stand there for a while and just kind of check things out. And, you know, when you compile the record that some of those people do, some of those horses do, you know, they can do whatever the hell they want out there. It's fine with their connections and everyone else.
Rank the Pletchers in so far in your order of preference.
You know, I suppose Magnum Moon would be the top one. Like everyone else, you know, I am concerned about why he drifted in the two races at Arkansas. The Rebel, he was lean in some. The Arkansas Derby, he was leaning out more than some, and you know, you just wonder why is he doing that. He's a good looking horse. He's obviously have an immense amount of talent. When he worked him the other day, he worked him inside of a horse. I wouldn't necessarily say he had the horse outside him to keep the horse from drifting out, but it, you know, he worked him down inside. He seemed to be going fine, but you know, I would definitely rank him as number one horse. Audible and Vino Rosso would be like my number. They'd be tied for second. You know, Audible's kind of horse. He obviously is a much different horse in the afternoon and the morning. And I'm sure as, you know, Elliot Walden and the Godfather would say, you'd rather have one slow in the morning than fast in the afternoon than the other way around. The ones that are the other way around are why I'm still doing this after 40 years. And, you know, the Indy horse, Noble Indy horse, I don't have anything against him, but visually to me, the Louisiana Derby was the least appealing of the preps I saw for this race. And, you know, some years it's been a really, you know, productive race and stuff, but this year's rendition, and I might be wrong come Saturday night, but this year's rendition really didn't, wasn't smelling any roses coming out of my television screen after that race.
The other major players that are on site and that we're seeing morning after morning and seemingly are making positive impressions on a lot of people, Good Magic and Hofburg, and they on Saturday and Sunday respectively certainly looked, and I'm going to pull a line from you, in any other year, quote unquote.
Yeah, Good Magic. Here's a horse that, you know, he burst onto the national scene winning the Breeders' Cup as a maiden. And, you know, then there was, well, did he deserve the two-year-old champion? Did he not? And obviously it was between him and Bolt the Arrow, and he got the two-year-old champion. And then he kind of came out and, you know, he didn't really fire in his first race at Gulfstream. You know, a lot of people got off the bandwagon, and some went so far as to say, well, he shouldn't have been the champion. And then he then he bounces back and wins the Bluegrass. So, and he's trained well here. He's a medium-sized colt. He's in the right barn, and he's by the right stallion. You know, he's got a medium stride. He doesn't have the most enormous stride in the world, but, you know, he's this is like a really big race for him. I mean, if he would happen to, you know, jump up and win or be a really good second or something, then I think any doubts remaining about this horse would be eliminated. You know, he's this is, you know, this important crossroads in the career of this horse, and we'll see how he handles it. But he's trained well since he's come here. Nice looking horse, you know, like I said, a medium sized horse, and Chad Brown knows what to do with these horses. There's no doubt about that. So we'll see what happens. Hofberg, he had a really good gallop the day before he worked, and he kind of tipped his hand that he was going to have a good work. He had a good work, and you know, it's he's a little bit pace dependent, and he needs to step it up. He obviously took a huge step forward in the Florida Derby, but he's obviously going to have to take another step up, and he's going to need some help up front. He's not, you know, his style is to lay back there, and he's going to need some help up front. You know, it's on paper going in, there's some pace, but it doesn't look like there's going to be a 45 and 2.5. It doesn't. And, you know, we'll see how the running goes. I mean, if Justify is what a lot of people think he is, and he blows to the lead at the 3/8 pole, you know, there's going to be some horses that feel like chasing him, and there's going to be some horses that are going to see him running up there and say, you know, I'm not going after that. And it could make it where, like, a horse like a Hofberg or someone could come down the stretch and pick up a piece of the race. You know, could I see Hofberg winning the race? No. Could I see him hitting the board? Absolutely. Could I see him with his pedigree and with the Judmont breeding and with Mr. Mott training him? Could I see him being a pretty nice horse and like a factor in the Travers later on this year? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I do see a number of people who kind of are anticipating that, you know, why not take the opportunity, but at the same time, this is a horse that down the road figures to have a big second half as well. But he yesterday, you know, I said it's not hard to have the work of the day when you're the only worker, but that would have been maybe the work of the day unless, you know, somebody really excelled. Let's hit a couple of other of the locals. The pair of Dale Romans, basically you've got one that's going to be up front, it looks like, and Promises Fulfilled, and Dale has been very open about the intent. He's a one-dimensional speed type. And Free Drop Billy, there are people that latched onto him last year as a two-year-old, Gary, and they don't want to let go. And he gives glimpses. And then you've got to factor in the seeming issue that Sporting Chance has with him. Sporting Chance clearly finds him problematic and gets him in trouble every so often.
True. I mean, I thought Free Drop Billy had run better than he did in the Breeders' Cup last year. And like you said, he's showed glimpses, but he hasn't busted the door down yet, and there's no place to bust the door down like Churchill Downs, and that doesn't necessarily mean he has to win the race, but he definitely gives the stride an impression of a horse that'll run that far. And again, there might be some horses that are a little bit tired coming to the quarter pole this year from chasing a certain horse or a certain couple of horses, and it could be a room on in the money or in the super high five or superfecta for horses like that, you know.
Along those lines, too, Lone Sailor, who had the blistering 57 and change you probably saw on video, and then came back and worked okay again.
Worked okay. He responded to Light Urging. He worked okay again. He comes out of the Louisiana Derby, and he was, you know, and stuff. And, I mean, there's, you know, if Justify doesn't do what a lot of people think he's going to do, and if you know, if Mendelsohn doesn't bring his Dubai race here, it's there's a lot of different things that could happen. I mean, I love both the Oro's work for the race. I mean, he looked terrific for me. Victor was just sitting on him. I mean, it's my opinion that California's going to have a big say in this race, and it wouldn't surprise me if both Justify and both the Aura wound up 1-2-3 in the money in this race.
Gene just asked on Twitter. He wanted me to ask you about Bolt Oro, having watched it probably on vid. And since we went in this direction, two follow-ups, Justify's work as well, where he captures his workmate at the wire, and then. Kept going quite nicely, and on that look at this, the California arrival, yeah. Hank Wesch and yeah. Comes in. That work yesterday or Saturday of Justify really looked like he was very comfortable sitting behind the workmate.
There's no problem doing that.
No,
there's no problem doing that. He does not show any mental instability whatsoever. I mean, I guess there are some people, because of his pedigree or whatever, that have some trepidations about him getting a mile and a quarter. Look at the horse when he comes here. Look at the size of the stride that he has. Look at the quarter of a mile from that work the other day, from the wire to the three-quarter pole. And look at the man that's training him. And that will that might temper your trepidations about this horse getting a mile and a quarter. You know,
instilled regard yesterday. Hollendorfer, who is not an effusive type,
you think?
he seemed very pleased, and yeah, this is a horse nobody's thinking about, but has shown flashes, and it's nice that Larry Best, with his first group of horses, gets to the big dance.
Man deserves to be here.
Absolutely,
I mean, he's came in and spent his money. I mean. You know, that the horse will run that far. He's kind of, you know, let's face it, he's been a bit of a disappointment in the prep for the Louisiana Derby and the San Diego Derby. He looked like he was going to be maybe top five material, and he's kind of not went forward since there. You know, Hollendorfer was as happy as he could be in his black Nikes yesterday. I mean, he was really thrilled with the way he's going, and we'll see what he does. You know, he's another one, kind of in the free drop Billy league. He's not as high on a lot of people's charts now as he was months ago, and this is a big race for him. Either he can bust through it, or he can kind of drift off into the ozone.
How is, in your years of observing Hollendorfer, how is he at adjusting to anything that proved to be a stumbling block and you know, shifting gear? Because certainly Santa Anita Derby, there was no way with the way that pace unfolded that he was going to have an impact in that race.
No. I mean, you know, he hasn't won all these races for not being able to figure it out. Most of them work 8 days after the race. They do. You know, he trains them rather vigorously. And, he trained that horse hard for the San Anita Derby. One of the works in the 7/8 of a mile work, he started him out in area code behind True Sacrificial Lambs, and he got up at the wire, and you know, it was very evident that he was a little perturbed with his previous effort, and he trained him for that race, and then he drew a race where the way the race shape came up, it wasn't going to help him, but you know, there's also the other possibility that the two horses that were running 1-2 around the racetrack were in a different league than his horse in Justify and Bolt Oro, and that's something we're going to see on May 5th.
Couple of other names to run by you that we've had a chance, and I do want to cover as many as possible, save us for later in the week. But Bravazo, who came out early morning before dawn the other day, when nobody was watching, and actually worked okay, apparently.
Worked okay for Loki. I mean, you know, another one. He needs to step it up. He was running in the Louisiana races and you know, he needs to step it up. I mean, you know, Wayne's kind of became a sentimental favorite, and he's been in so many of these races, but you know, he's going to have to show it to me.
Combatant for Steve Asmussen, to me, he looks like a horse that'll explode on grass when the time comes.
He's built like it, kind of bred like it. Can't knock his work this morning. Big, long striding horse. Wouldn't be surprised to see him make some noise somewhere down the road. I don't know if it's going to be Saturday or not.
Solomini is one of these horses that is post-hype as well, and he's going to grind along at 24 and change.
He's like the West Coast version to Audible. If you saw him in the morning, you wouldn't bet him for $40,000, but they run different sometimes in the afternoon than the morning.
Before we wrap, Gary, because you're getting ready for the draw show at for the Oaks, speaking a couple of Oaks horses, a quick rundown of any of the Oaks fillies that's impressed you locally. I mean, obviously, we know Midnight Bizou. To me, Midnight Bizou is got a big circle around her for me, but what else
you know, it looks like an East versus West showdown between Midnight Bizou and Monomoy Girl, and it very well should be. For those many people out there that don't like $8 exactas, Wonder Gadot worked very, very good here, and Johnny Velasquez is on her, and she's going to be a price. That's not a bad combination. And Coach Rocks, if you watch her race at Gulfstream that she won, she got stopped at the 3/8 pole, picked herself up, and still won the race. And it was a pretty good effort. And those would be my two value picks in that race. You have a total wild card in there in Raya. I mean, if Raya runs good, then that will certainly bode well for Mendelsohn the following day. But you have a total wild card in there with her going in. Let's face it, it looks like it's between A and B, Monomoy Girl and Midnight Bizou.
I was going to ask you about Raya, and I was glad to see Drayden Van Dyke you know, get to come to town and get a big mount.
Drayden is a superstar in the making. He is really
agreed.
Good.
Agreed. And finally, Mendelsohn, how are you going to ultimately adjudicate your position?
Know, he's not going to do anything when he's here.
Right.
He's in
Thursday
quarantine. He's just going to be trained very lightly, and it's he's just a total wild card going in. I mean, if he can do this and beat this, what appears to be a very strong Derby field, then he will enter super horse status. I mean, he will. I mean, he's taken the worst of it, coming all the way across the country, all the way across the globe, into other horses' backyards, into what appears to be a very strong Derby. But he has connections behind him, and he has pedigree behind him, and he beat the hell out of those horses in the UAE Derby. Now we're just going to see how that translates here.
And is the youngest by date of any of them. Won't turn three until May 17th.
Be one hell of a birthday party if he wins the Derby with that, what they'll have for him, wouldn't it?
Gary Young, everybody. And, of course, GaryYoungThoroughbreds.com.
Yep. My girlfriend does that.
Well, and Fields, the offers, the phone rings off the hook.
Right.
When you're a Gary Young.
Right. Right. Yeah, right.
We'll get Gary later in the week for final thoughts. Gary, as always, appreciate it. The best, and we're going to take the break here. Johnny D's been standing by.
My man.
Your man, Johnny D. He could hit a golf ball, that's for sure. And he'll maybe tee him up. He'll break some eggs, break some windows. Johnny D joins us from Express Bet. After this, we're live at Churchill Downs. And Gary Young with a rundown. I think the only horse we didn't discuss, we didn't talk Firenze and Enticed, the two that will actually arrive today from the East. And yeah, I think that's it. I think we got everybody else run down. Where'd it go? Where'd my sheet go? There it is. Let me make sure. Yeah, the only unmarked horses are Enticed and Firenze Fire. So Gary will get a look at them during the week and have some final thoughts. Enticed has got some fans. And one of those horses that we identify as post-type. That will end up probably a longer price than others. Than he should be. Let's step away. Johnny joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey folks, Eddie Olczyk here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Maryland for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, $25,000. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vaughn, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Johnny, we're sorry.
We're back at the races, 25 minutes into hour two. We're flying through day one here of Derby week. Gary Young just giving us the recap of OBS as well as his rundown of what has gone on here the last several days. Johnny D taking it all in and is also appreciating the input of the wagering guide. Came out a day early, Johnny. I don't know who can we laud for a 24-hour advance on this year's wagering guide. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. We can thank Steve Vick. He turned in his expert opinion early.
So that means I've been the one holding it up till Friday all these years?
Exactly. No, I'm just kidding. We aim for Friday. You know, you never know when something's going to happen. And over the many years, I think we've been doing this guide for maybe 15 or 16 years now. It's been a long time. It's an ExpressBet staple. Things happen. So you want to leave some room in the schedule when things happen so that you can you know, get it. You don't want to tell people it's going to be up Friday and then you don't put it up till Sunday. That's no good. So we say Friday, and if we have it Thursday, hey, that's great.
Well, I'm glad that I knuckled down and got it in early. And now I'm embarrassed that it was it was me all along.
No, I'm just kidding. There's a variety of things that can happen, and so many people contribute to the guide, not just the experts that everyone can read about their opinions. And I think, and I want to thank all those experts because they really did a great job of running down the race. I mean, if you read those expert commentaries in the ExpressBet Kentucky Derby wager guide, you will have a very good sense of the race. You have a really look. I'm not going to sit here and say somebody's going to pick the winner of the Derby and the first four finishers, which is my goal. I'm not going to sit here and say that's going to happen because this year's Derby is a really difficult race. But I will say that if you get the guide and you read the guide, experts. Excuse me, Bob Neumeier, Jeff Siegel, Dick Girardi, Millie Ball, Steve Bick, and I'm forgetting one guy, John White. If you read those experts' opinions, you are going to have an excellent idea of how this race shapes up.
Well, we're also going to be waiting. I mean, we have until what, Thursday? When do you and Eddie Olczyk contribute your betting concepts?
Yeah, Eddie joins the guide. It'll be available Thursday of this week. And of course, we have the draw tomorrow. The Kentucky Derby draw will be tomorrow. So you may have some experts wanting to change their selections or their $100 wagering strategies once the draw is completed. I mean, I would have to think if God forbid, if Justify draws the one hole, people are going to be scurrying for their keyboards to try and change all sorts of opinions from coast to coast. So the updates, including, a draw recap, the updates will continue each day throughout the week. So you can go to expressbet.com, get those updates, and then by Thursday, I will actually have included in the updates and also in my weekly column at expressbet.com, I will have a horse-by-horse rundown of the Derby and my suggested wagering strategy. I like to put up a superfecta, although as I've been working on it, it's very difficult this year. Not that it's easy other years, but it's extremely difficult this year.
Well, and we touched on it in recent weeks, and I've been asking pretty much everybody, their approach. That was last week's mission, was to get a feel for bet structures and bankroll approach. And now that we get this close, Johnny, and as the field is for now pretty firm, knock on wood, and we certainly hope that, you get this close, to entry day tomorrow, you don't want to lose anybody and disappoint sets of connections. But when you, just as I asked Gary, how, for instance, do you adjudicate Mendelsohn? I mean, here's a horse that nobody has seen since World Cup night. And, somebody asked me on Twitter the other day, what is the published workouts of, for Mendelsohn? And I explained there is no published workouts for Mendelsohn in that regard. He's galloping on turf gallops and up and down hills and out into the fields and, the paths that they've got at Ballydoyle. And that's the way they train off of yards. And there's no way to know what's going on with Mendelsohn, and we won't see him until Thursday and Friday in the flesh.
Yeah, well, I mean, with him, I think Gary did a really great job of analyzing Mendelsohn's opportunity here. He's going to train well. As you can see from our horses, if you've been watching the workouts, either on Churchill Downs or on XBTV, if you've been watching what's progressed, I think you can put the Kentucky Derby workouts in list horses in a positive section, horses who look really good, and then the horses who just look good. You know, there's very, I mean, this is, we're talking about the Kentucky Derby. With Mendelsohn, you're talking about, you know, the top, one of, if not the top racing outfit in the world, one of the top racing outfits in the world. So he's going to train fine. That's not a question. And I think we're looking at the works here. All our horses are doing fine. I mean, some are doing maybe, you'd say, more positive than others. And that's just, I think Good Magic is in that group. I think Lone Sailor has been in that group. I think Justify is in that group. And I think Hofburg is another one. You could even say, you know, on the fringe, Baltoro, Billy, Free Drop Billy, maybe those two. But I think those first four that I mentioned, Good Magic, Lone Sailor, Justify, and Hofburg, have kind of made a little bit of a statement there. Nobody's made like an unbelievable statement that I can tell. And I don't think any of the clockers have said that. So, but those four seem to be doing rather well. Let's put it that way. But the rest of them, on the other side of the coin, I don't think there's been anyone, and please correct me because I'd like the information. I don't think anyone has worked that people have said, oh my God, terrible. Terrible, awful. I know that Promises Fulfilled maybe didn't corner so well one day, and yeah, you know, there are little things, but I don't think there's been anything that said, well, that horse, he shouldn't even be here. So that's what I look for. I look for horses who are doing really well and horses who are doing really poorly. I don't have any really poorlies. I have a couple of really wells.
How will you ultimately envision, obviously the draw is the last piece of this puzzle. Going in, Johnny, and assuming there isn't anything that is, you know, life-changing regarding the way the 20 end up lining up, ideally, the horses down inside are the type that are going to drop out of it. You know, the combatants, the My Boy Jacks, the Free Drop Billies, a horse like that, if somebody has to have the one, since someone does have to have the one. What pace do you envision right now? And because there's in moderate to, you know, some that Travis was pushing the concept that the pace pressers will engage and that they will prompt enough to make this faster than moderate. And I tend to think moderate is what we're going to get.
Yeah. Well, I listened last week with you and James Scully talking about the pace setup. And I think the thought was, you know, we have one clear speed horse and then we have several. We have a group of horses who would like to be close. I don't think that's shame. I mean, that's the way it is. And whether that many being close, who's going to want to be second so badly that they're going to go faster than maybe they really want to, but they think being stalking the leader is where they want to be, so they're willing to pay that price to get there. You know, things happen. Races are an evolving organism, you know, and I think post position is going to be critical to what happens, because if you're in a spot where you're on the far outside and you've got to get over before that first turn and you want to be in that second flight or first flight behind the leader, I guess we could call it, or you want to be right behind the leader, you're going to have to go. And if there are a couple inside of you who have similar early speed, and they also want that same position, well, then you're going to end up with a fast early pace. And I do believe that Justify is going to be a key link in this chain, because where he draws, how many speed horses he has outside of him, because my experience, you know, with a horse like this, Bob Baffert is not going to wait around. When you have what you consider to be the horse to beat, you go. You get as close to, you get out of the, especially in this type of race, you get out of the mess. You put yourself prominently in the race. You don't have to go to lead, but you have to be prominently in the race. Get out of that mosh pit that becomes the first turn and clear. And I think that's the goal for Justified. So who's going to be inside of him? If they're, the worst thing for Justified is to have a several speed horses outside of him to where he's got to go faster than he really would like to go to get to that early position. So you asked me about pace, and I can tell you, while on paper, here's what it looks like. I really do think that when that draw happens, then you can start to seriously consider pace. What I do at this stage, what I'm concentrating on now is Ranking Egg. And what I mean by that is I've started my list of who I need, who I don't need, who I would like, and who I can afford. Those are kind of, you know, here's who I have to have in this race. Here's who I don't need. And if any of those horses beats me, it's like, you know what? I didn't have it. I can live with that. Then there's the next flight of the horses you would like to use, the threats, the price horses, that group. And then there's a group that's like, well, they're not tosses, but they're not ones that I want in. It's how many of those can I afford? And that's where you get into building the ticker. And it's breaking the edge. You've got to make decisions. What do you do with a Mendelsohn? You've got to make a decision. Okay, my opinion is he's not going to win the Kentucky Derby. That's my opinion. I feel, you know, as Gary Young just said, if he does that, if he comes from Dubai, comes here, wins the Derby against this field, you know, you can bow down to him as one of the greatest horses that ever lived. I don't see that happening. Will he hit the board? Ah, that's a completely, will he be fourth? That's a completely different question. So he's on the border, you know. And really, you take Justify. This is an incredibly talented horse. He's in my need horses. He's on my list of, I've got Audible, Justify, and Good Magic as my three needs. I can't knock Audible. There's just nothing. There's no solid knock I can deliver on him. Justify, you know, you've got the Jinx. You've got all these trends that are against him. But the one thing is he's a tremendous talent. So until they draw the post, I can't lose him. I need him. And Good Magic, he's done. The one race at Gulfstream is the only one that you can look at and say, well, what happened here? And the trainer's already explained it, and he's come back and proven it. Well, that looks like it was true. Come back and worked well. I can't knock him. So those are my three needs. Boldoro, I don't think you can look past him. He's a solid runner. He's been, you know, he's shown up all the time. Do I think he can win? I don't really think he can win because he hasn't. He's clearly, in my mind, shown that he cannot beat Justify and he cannot beat Good Magic. So I have those two above him. But good horse, comes out of the right races, the one you need. Hofburg, he's one on the come. Can he win the race? If you think Audible can win the race, you kind of, I mean, Hofburg, it was only his third start. He moved just about with Audible in the Florida Derby. He was about two lengths behind him, and he reduced that to about a length. And then it went back to, you know, the winning margin at the end, which was understandable given the experience level of the two horses. I think you have to include him. And kind of an up-and-coming, sharp horse who doesn't have the figures, doesn't have the cachet. Lone Sailor, you know, he likes that racetrack. I'm going to move him forward. He made the lead in Louisiana. I know Gary said he didn't really like the Louisiana Derby, but I wouldn't. Lone Sailor made the lead. This is an improving horse. He seems to be getting good at the right time. And we always see these kind of find their way into the superfecta. Seems to love Churchill Downs. Has a trainer who knows how to win at Churchill Downs. I'm starting to get like feeling things here. So those are kind of my have to have. There's my needs and there's my I will have these. That's my group. The further I go, the deeper I go, is going to depend on how much I can afford. And that next group includes Mendelsohn, maybe Vino Rossio. You've got the Wood kind of Billy, Free Drop Billy. You know, he kind of didn't follow through really this year, but he's kind of worked okay. He's on my border. Salamini, you talk about a horse who coming from the Bob Baffert barn who just keeps, you know, going along. He wouldn't be my first choice, but, and then Flame Away, how do you throw a horse like that? You know, you got to try and include him if you can, although I think he was going to be third, maybe fourth the other day. When I went back and looked at the Bluegrass, I don't know. But you look at his record and you kind of want him on your team. So those are the ones that, you know, if I could have them all on my ticket some way, if I could figure out a way, but obviously won't be able to afford them. And the rest of the group, in still regard, Frenzy Fry, Bravazo, Promises Fulfilled, Combatant, Enticed, I'm not a fan of any of the, or Magnum Moon, those, I'm not a fan of those.
There's a commonality when you look at the charts, and there's no other race like this where you can find this kind of storyline, and that is a horse that comes from off the pace and clunks up literally, and then you almost never hear from again, and it's miraculous. You go back to 2012. I've been working off really just the last six derbies, but you could do it, you know, forever, virtually. But Went the Day Well was fourth at 30-1 behind I'll Have Another and Bodemeister. Golden Soul, 34-1, and of course got up second. And actually, Revolutionary was coming late as well. That was behind Orb, of course. Then you had a horse like Commanding Curve, the 2 years in a row, Dallas, 37-1 that year. You look at not there really wasn't the same kind of deep closer in behind American Pharoah, although Frosted actually came, you know, but he's obviously a horse that went on and performed well, and including one of the best Met Miles we've ever seen. Sudden Breaking News was a nose and a head away from being third at 25-1 2 years ago. And then, of course, last year, Looking at Lee. And he actually had a decent rest of the three-year-old year and has struggled so far this year. But there's a horse like each of these virtually every year. And, you know, the rest are either horses that are in the midst of solid three-year-old years or, you know, the horse that, you know, that just put everything together at the right time. And I suppose Always Dreaming to some extent fits that bill. So does Nyquist. I'll Have Another, came back, of course, and wins the Preakness and then the career's over. So there's certain things that you see regularly, Johnny, and how much of that do you lean on and when you're building these tickets, and how much should people, you know, that are in the midst of this process, how much of that should they be doing?
Yeah, but first thing I want to do is I want to make sure I didn't leave out my boy Jack. I don't think I mentioned him. as one of the ones that I need. But my boy Jack Hofberg and Lone Sailor are the kind of the extra tossing, along with Bolt, Audible, Justify, and Good Magic. They're kind of my, you know, my mix-in. That's my solid group. So you'll notice in that solid group, and it happens, I think it just happens, and I want to say I look for those kinds of closers who are improving so that the Derby day might be their big day. You know, they're kind of learning as they go along. Some of the ones you mentioned are, if I remember correctly, most of them were on the heavier side of racing. In other words, on the side of heavier side of being raced. In other words,
yes.
You know, it's more 10 starts, 9 starts, 11 starts, something along those lines, where in this day and age now, we're looking at horses with 4 starts, 3 starts, who are winning the Kentucky Derby, 5 starts, something in that area, less racing. But those big price, some would call them clunk up horses, but I don't really like that term, because they're running. They're not clunking up. They are running. But they are appreciating the distance. They have a great foundation. They come from off the pace. So they, you know, there's a lot of, in the Derby, whether the pace on your stopwatch is fast or slow, it always is contentious. That's one thing, almost always contentious. It's challenged. It's horses are, you know, being asked to do much more than they've ever had to do. And a lot of them just can't do it. And so they say, I'm done. I'll see you next time. And so these closers take advantage of that opportunity, and they're picking up horses as they go along. And they're, you know, sliding in and out. You've seen the replays, you know, the Calvin Burrell rides on the rail where they're zooming by other horses. Again, we talk about the optical illusion. It's not that they're going so much faster. In fact, they're probably, in most cases, not going faster. But the other horses are going slower. So the optical illusion is that they're roaring by. Well, it's a combination. And so those are the kinds of horses that end up either, you know, a lot of times long shots in the money, or Mind That Bird was kind of one of those that won, you know, he was one of the, except as you pointed out, he did come back and run well. So it wasn't a fluke. And we're not saying any of these horses were a fluke. In fact, I guess that's my point. They're not a fluke. Like if you see my boy Jack run third in this Derby, are you going to be surprised at all? Well, you'll say, no, look at, you know, he's got a good resume. Look at all the experience he has. He's been improving all the way. You know, he had a nice race the other day. If you see Hofberg, Hofberg is not the same exactly. He's a little different. Let's take Lone Sailor. If you see Lone Sailor finish fourth at 30-1 or 40-1, are you going to be totally surprised? I don't think so. Will you be mildly surprised? Nah. I mean, you're going to say, yeah, you know, he was a late developer. Yeah, but he also worked in 57. Now, okay, the track was fast. I understand all that. But he came back and he worked well again over the Churchill surface. So, those are the kind I look for. Those are the kind of juice up your whatever you're doing. And as you say, it's not that you're looking for something strange to happen. I'm looking for the normal to happen. I just want to find the guy that does it. That's all.
Well, that's the exercise, and we'll be down to short strokes. And got to mention, having this a day early, Johnny, both the Oaks card today being drawn and the Derby card tomorrow, makes things, frankly, I'm going to say easier. There might be people that would argue that it'll make it that much, you know, just more arduous when it comes to making final decisions. But having an extra 24 hours for both of these cards can really help, I think. It gives you particularly a chance to look at everything else. I think, you know, people actually might even appreciate looking at the rest of those cards and the other stakes and starting to plan how to attack both days. And I stress that, you know, don't try to wait until Friday or Saturday to figure out, you know, where you want to apportion your bankroll. Try to make some decisions early and portion things out the same way, you know, you're breaking the eggs and crossing horses off the Derby eligibility list. Do the same thing, in terms of figuring out how you want to wager both days and put some time into that. Don't just do it. It's fine to have some action bet money on the side, watching the board and throwing a few, you know, savers and whatnot, but have a plan going into these 2 days.
You know, that is incredibly wise advice, and I would like to echo it, because so many occasions in the past, you know, you get excited. I mean, if you're a racing fan, these 2 days, they excite you like a few others on our calendar. We have a few other big days, but these are two huge days. And the undercards are incredibly alluring races. I mean, you want to play. You're excited. You're in the gambling mode. Maybe you're even fortunate enough to be sitting in front of a computer modem, somewhere and playing the races on Friday at work or whatever you're doing, and you're excited. So, but don't be careful, because I've had years where you go through Friday and maybe you don't cash many tickets and you miss the Oaks, and then now you're kind of a little sour before Saturday's even started, but you get up Saturday morning and it's Derby day and you're pumped again and you bounce back and you fire at the undercard on Saturday and you come up empty, and by the time the Derby comes around, your bankroll looks like an elephant stepped on it. I mean, you're just, and your spirits are crushed. I'm not a genius to tell you how to deal with this, but think about it, is all I'm saying. Just kind of, you know, we get excited. We're horse players, we get excited. We want to play everything. Pick four, pick five. Oh, the pick six has got this carryover from Friday into Saturday. Oh, I got to play that. You got to do some spot picking. And just slow down. Think of a bankroll. So that, say to yourself, if I get my ass kicked all day Friday and all day Saturday until the Derby, do I want to go into the Derby feeling awful? And set a number so that, look, if I lose this amount Friday and Saturday before the Derby, that's fine. I've got this amount for the Derby. And you know, some people say, oh, I'm not interested in the Derby. I don't bet the Derby. I don't care about the Derby. Fine. That's great. That's wonderful. Anybody feels that way, that's fabulous. For me, I enjoy it. It's what I like to do. I like all this buildup. I like listening to Steve Vick and all his guests. I like watching the works from XBTV all season long. I like watching the preps. I enjoy it. It's a process. And I enjoy the process. And so here's a race that I know more about than any other race, except maybe a Breeders' Cup race, than any other race the entire year. So, yes, I'm going to bet on it. Of course I'm going to bet on it. I'm going to bet a lot on it because I know more about it than any other race the rest of the year. We've had interviews with trainers. We have jockeys. We've seen workouts. We've analyzed. We've had every expert. I've listened to so many clockers now. My head is spinning. But look. Fortunately, they're all saying the same thing, so that's good. But yeah, set aside enough so that if you get killed Friday, which happens, it happens. If you get killed all day Saturday, still keep a positive taste in your mouth by setting a limit on what you're ready to lose all weekend leading up. And then here's what I want to play in the Derby. And that keeps it more, it keeps you happier, really. And you got to have a clear mind. When you're playing the races, if you're pressed, there's an old saying, Steve, and I know you've heard it, scared money never wins. That's an old saying. And then I added to it, terrified money really never wins. and I've been there, so I know. Set it aside. Be ready. Be prepared. Look at the cards. Pick your spots. Enjoy this week, this upcoming weekend, because you're going to see some good racing. And that's why we love this game.
Just going through as I listen to Johnny, and I want to give you a couple of notes. Brought it up last week. The two-day wagers are the Oaks and Derby double and the Oaks Turf Classic Derby Pick 3. Those are your two-day wagers. There are three Pick 5s both days. And so
see what I mean?
You want to be a little careful. And I will mention, if you want to pick races on Friday that are absolutely linchpin, the seventh race on Friday, if you're going to be fully involved, the seventh race on Friday overlaps, and you've got to be, it starts the pick five. Seventh race will start the pick five that ends with the Oaks, but it also is the anchor leg of the first pick five, which goes races 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So as a lot of times you'll hear Tom Quigley stress the overlap, the fifth race in California, which is a linchpin race. Same thing is true here. You want to be absolutely, no matter what stake it is, and it'll be a stake, you want that race is going to be vital to, you know, to your approach, because if you're going to play both pick fives. Then there's also a pick five that'll end with the last race of the day. And that's true, very similar. Interestingly, there isn't a one race overlap on Saturday. The pick five on Saturday, the first one is race 3 and goes to 7. And then another pick five starts. That's the one that ends with the Derby. Races 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The Derby is the 12th on Saturday. And then there's a last five races, pick five as well. And then the pick fours, there is occasional overlap on Saturday, notably the fifth race on Saturday. That is the anchor leg of the first pick four, and it starts the second pick four. So get familiar with the menu, and you know, look and see. And, you know, Johnny, for you, when you get these opportunities, Breeders' Cup is obviously the other big two-day. Then we'll do this with Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Day, with Brooklyn and Belmont Day as well. Looking for places to build and finding a race that you can go on either end. I mean, if there's a very strong opinion in anywhere on these slates, and then you use that to build in both directions. You want to look at pick threes and doubles. You know, make sure that you take your strongest opinion and build from there.
It's great advice. It's fantastic advice, and it's funny. We should stumble onto this topic, because just yesterday I kind of scolded myself and said, you know, you've got to do a better job of, you know, with all the options now, with all the wagering options, you can't, it's like breaking eggs. You can't bet everything. I mean, you can, but you won't last long. You know, you have to pick your spots. And in the old days, they used to say, well, you make a two win bets a day, I think is in the Ainsley, is in the Tom Ainsley's Complete Guide to Thoroughbred Racing. Still the Bible of racing. It's a little dated now. It's a lot dated, but it's still the greatest, one of the greatest racing books around. But he used to say 2 win wagers a day, some days 3, some days none. With all the exotics now, you've got to pick your spot. And there's nothing wrong with picking a race and, as you mentioned, just make a double out of it. Make a pick 3 if you're not looking to make a win bet. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with a nice win bet once in a while either. I've kind of come to I've fallen back in love with the win wages because it's kind of nice if you like a horse that's an okay price and he wins. That's all right. But again, with so many exotics and the way the exotics pay, the tendency is to play them all. You know, you play the first pick 5 and then here comes the next pick 5 and I got to play that. And what do you do in between? Do you play each race in between? You can go broke in a hurry. So you have to have some kind of a strategy. And you touched on it. A great idea. Pick your spot. Find your spot. And then branch out from there. Find a horse you like if it's in the 6th race. And then see what's around it. What kind of what you can make of it. You know, Steve, back in the ancient times, when Santa Anita and other tracks ran 9 races a day, I used to laugh and tell people, you know, they shouldn't call the 8th race the featured race. The 9th race is the featured race every day because that's your last chance to get out.
That's
it's
right.
It's the end of whatever was going on, whether it was a pick 6 or a pick 3 or pick 4. That was always a feature race for me.
Johnny, let's do this. Stay with us as we're ready for John Asher, and there's Ben Huffman and the staff that are over in the Aristides room. We'll be there tomorrow doing the show, and let's pick up the audio from across the building.
We'll go to the post draw. Officiating over the proceedings are officials to the back of these gentlemen, and one is the chief steward for the state of Kentucky, Barbara Borden. She's just behind Dan Bork there, and Kevin Flannery, the president of Churchill Downs Racetrack, standing by in case, you know, he used to be an attorney, in case legal decision should be needed, we'll jump to him very quickly. But now we prepare to move forward with the post-draw, these 14 fillies for the 144th running of the Longines Kentucky Oaks, actually in Oaks history. While this year with the Kentucky Derby, we'll be looking for our 144th winner of the Kentucky Derby. We have already had 144 winners of the Kentucky Oaks. We had 1 year in which we had the Oaks was split in 2 divisions, and we had 2 winners of the Oaks that year. But this year, looking for the winner of the official winner of the 144th running of the Longines Kentucky Oaks. Again, 14 3-year-old fillies running 1 1/8 on Friday here at Churchill Downs. Ben Huffman, you want to get started?
Here we go. Number two is Coach Rocks, Dale Romans, Louis Saez.
Post number 2 to Coach Rocks.
Number 13.
13 is Eskimo Kisses, Ken McPeak, Corey Lannery.
Eskimo Kisses coming off a good run in the Ashland to Keeneland last time out.
Number 3.
3 is Classy Act, Brett Calhoun, Brian Hernandez Jr.
Classy Act for Brett Calhoun, one of 2 Calhoun trainees in this Kentucky Oaks.
Number 12.
12, Patrona Margarita, Brett Calhoun, Ricardo Santana.
Calhoun again with Patrona Margarita, the winner of the debutante stakes here last year as a 2-year-old at Churchill Downs.
Number 7.
7 is Rhea, Bob Baffert, Drayden Van Dyke.
Rhea preparing to make her first start in the United States. She was 2nd against the boys in the UAE Derby last time out behind Mendelssohn, now trained for the first time by Bob Baffert.
Number Number six.
Six, Kelly's Humor, Brad Cox, Irad Ortiz.
Kelly's Humor for Louisville-born Brad Cox, who will have a busy day on Kentucky Oaks Day. We'll hear more from him later in this draw.
Number four.
Four is Chocolate Martini, Tom Amos, Javier Castellano.
Chocolate Martini, winner of the Fairgrounds Oaks last time out for Tom Amos. And that's half the field. That's the first seven in this year's draw for the 144th Kentucky Oaks. We'll take a short break and come back with the remaining seven. Half the field set now for this week's $1 million Kentucky Oaks.